Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Here it is. keep your love, my book, and twirl the mysteries that take me over glass, and turn it on the field when the sun burns deep. Depends on find the dance, light the candles on.
Everybody to Ghosts and Demons. I'm your host, Michael Long. We're set in for a special show on a Sunday night. Normally our shows are Monday night, 10 p.m. for 2 hours, but tonight we have a special Sunday night show for 2 hours. As we have booked a special guest tonight, Lon Milo Duquette. He will be on the line with us in just a minute, and he will be taking your call. So please call in early so we can get you your call. Our phone number to call in is 347-884-8245. Call us and we'll put you on the phone live with Lon, and you can ask him any kind of question you like. Lon here is going to be talking to us about a number of subjects. He's going to talk about magic. He's going to talk about the occult, angels, demons, and many, many other works that he has done in the spirit world. If this is your first time listening to our show, I appreciate you listening. Our show is called Ghosts and Demons. Our show is about to explore the world of the afterlife. My quest for this show, and has been since a young child, has been what's after this life? What's after we die? What is the afterlife like? What's the heaven like? What's, as I found out, what the church teaches you and what you find out from people, say, who have near-death experiences, who see a glimpse of heaven and come back to tell all about it, is so different from what the church teaches. And that also became my quest. What is the real story out there? What really happens? What is God really like? I know my early years in the Catholic Church, I was basically taught in this 1970s that basically you had to be near perfect to make it into heaven. Otherwise, the best you could expect is a pretty long time of burning in purgatory to purify your soul. So at that young stage, I feared God, and now I've learned to love God, which has changed my life 100%. So the show is, and when we say on our show demons, some people have written me and asked me if we're promoting or worshiping demons, and that's not the case, nothing like that. We are actually the opposite. We are trying to get out the information to people about demons. It's not very often someone would come across that. Actually, it's very rare. But when that does happen, there is help out there. And we want to make sure people out there know that the myth, the message, the evil one will give you, which is nobody wants you, God doesn't want you, the church doesn't want you, it's total lies. And I've worked with people that have told me that, Maybe they came across one girl who years ago had an abortion, and she felt so bad about it currently, and the devil was telling her that. And through talk that I had with her over a period of months, she and her family went back to church. She all of a sudden realized that God still loved her and that God never left her. So if you're ever caught in a situation like that, you know, reach out to help from someone. But please know that God would never give up on his children. And with the words you're hearing from the devil is just a bunch of lies and falsehoods. So we're going to go ahead and bring on Lon now. Again, to call in, our number is 347-884-8245. I hope you will call in with your questions, stories, comments. That will be great. So with nothing further to do, let me go ahead and bring Lon on here. Hang on just a second. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, great. You are now on our show here with called Ghosts and Demons. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm really glad that you're on. When I first started this show, you were one of the first ones I was trying to get on this show to book, because the number of times I've heard you on Coast to Coast and other shows, you've just been just a wealth of information. Just enjoyed listening to you so much.
Uh-oh, now I have something to live up to.
And you're that, too. You're very comical, which is great. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself in case they haven't heard from you about you before.
Well, I'm an aging hippie. I'm 60 years old. I'll be 61 in July. And I sort of cut my spiritual teeth in the 60s. I like to think of myself as a child of the 60s. And I was born in California, Southern California, but my family moved to Nebraska when I was 7 years old, and I was raised in Nebraska. That's where I met my wife. And but as soon as I graduated from high school, I moved back to California right in time for the psychedelic 60s. And I went to college. I majored in drama and music, but what I was really majoring in was the 60s. And I was introduced just in the first week I was back in California. I had the opportunity to take LSD, and this is 1966. And in that one evening and that one experience, I knew that I was not in Nebraska anymore. Number one, but more importantly, I knew that my mind and human consciousness is a far more wonderful thing than I had ever imagined. And from that point on, I was determined and convinced that the only thing in life pursuing is understanding myself and understanding this this wonderful world of consciousness. So I was a self-educated Eastern mystic for a while, and as I like to tell people, I eventually discovered that meditation and yoga is really hard work, and I was I was looking for something easier. Unfortunately, I never found anything easier, but by the time I settled on something, it was too late. But anyway, it seemed like for a while there, I was trying to play Eastern software on my Western hardware, and I began looking around something that Western civilization had to offer along the same lines as the spiritual sciences of the East, and I eventually came in contact with the Hebrew Kabbalah, and through that, the study of tarot, which believe it or not, at least one aspect of it is directly related to the Hebrew Kabbalah. And the Western mystery tradition, the initiatory traditions of the West. And I became involved in the Rosicrucian Order AMORC, A-M-O-R-C. And I took their correspondence, self-initiation courses, but I was also active in a local lodge here in Long Beach. And I soon discovered that I enjoyed ritual work. I resonated to dressing up in robes and strutting around in the dark. So my resonance to ritual magic more or less was born out of that Rosicrucian experience, although they would not ever want you to call what they do magic. But anyway, I was a self-taught Western mystery tradition student, and one day in the late 1980s, I more or less woke up to the fact that many of the people that I studied, many of my teachers, many of the people that knew more about this stuff than I did were dead. And I was more or less stuck instant budding authorityship. Does that make any sense?
Right. Uh-huh.
So that said, in 1975, I through my studies of the Kabbalah, in the early 70s, I came upon the writings of Aleister Crowley, the famous and the infamous English magician, Aleister Crowley. And in 1975, I was initiated by some surviving members of Aleister Crowley's magical order, Ordo Templi Orientis. I think they were down to five people, living members that were left from Crowley's day. Crowley died in 47. From then on, I sort of had a more formal structure behind my studies. And in about 1988, I was asked by one of my lodge members here. I have an OTO lodge in Newport Beach. One of my lodge members was Christopher S. Hyatt, who had written quite a bit, and he was the head of the Israel Regardi Foundation, and Hyatt wanted to write a book concerning tarot, and he made me the offer to help him write a book, and I guess that's where my writing career started. Hyatt and I, over a period of 2 years, wrote and published four books, which are still in print, and that sort of got me the writing bug bit me when I turned 40,
mm-hmm.
And I kind of haven't looked back since. And for years through my adult life, I held a 9-to-5 job while I was doing all of this. I was I guess you got to be an amateur, because where's the money in studying consciousness? Yeah. Finally in 2003, I think it was, I made the move because it was getting I was writing so much and lecturing so much that I found it impossible to really hold down a regular 9-to-5 job. So I've been a full-time lawn Milo Duquette since 2003, and knock on wood, so far so good.
Going back to what you said from the start there, Lon, question, when you said you started, experimenting with LSD and it helped you relate a lot to your mind and explore. I have always wondered, since I haven't experienced that, how do you know the difference between the drug and what you're really experiencing? How do you know it's just not an illusion?
Well, you and me talking on the phone here is an illusion. The simple matter is I don't. The thing is that if it served no other legitimate purpose than to shock me out of the momentum, the very restricted momentum of my rational thought, up until that evening when I first experienced LSD, I was a militant materialist. A militant, at least I thought in my mind, a militant atheist. I had absolutely no interest in or belief in an afterlife or a pre-life or an in-between life. I figured we're just mammals, and when we're gone, we're gone. And the LSD experience, at least at first, was sort of like shock. Like a shock treatment that needed to sort of snap me out of that very, very narrow view of my mind and view of life in general, and of course there came a time that my period of experience of experiments with psychedelics was relatively short, and because I knew that whatever it was they were opening up, it wasn't opening up in a way that could lead me at least to a level of permanent illumination, and I just don't like feeling jangled and. And all of the side effects that go with that. So I'm all I can say is that for Lon Milo Duquette in 1966, it was for a period of time a very, very useful and productive set of experiences. But, I can't say that for anybody else, and this is how many years later, 40-some years later.
Right. So that basically kicked off your quest to look into the spiritual world, the spirit life, like what's after this life. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Uh-huh. And the... A lot of questions I've had and people have asked me is when you work with magic or you, as you said earlier, would dress up in robes and do the ceremonial, can you explain that more? Are you, like, what forces are you calling down? Are those the dark angels or how does that transpire and what do you do
with
that?
Well, we got to really back up and look at things in a more generic, in generic terms.
Mm-hmm.
I see everything in the universe. I see the universe itself. I see existence itself as a function of consciousness. If we want to call God a supreme being, we should call God the supreme consciousness, and we're all aspects of that supreme consciousness. And that supreme consciousness makes itself known to us through our very, very limited powers of perception. And, we can't even hear what dogs hear. We can't see like Superman. But even if we could, we couldn't wrap our minds around the nature of this supreme consciousness.
Right.
And so we have to approach it in another way. We have to approach it with powers that we do possess, whereby we can interact, direct, invoke, come into contact with the various levels of this supreme consciousness. And so we have this wonderful capacity. The mind has the wonderful capacity to transcend regular time space, to transcend, we don't have to be a master mechanic to know how to drive a Ferrari. So we don't need to have a total intellectual grasp of the infinite powers of the universe in order to in an artful way use those powers toward our own illumination and our own enlightenment. And magic, in a way, is the process or the spiritual art form. It's a spiritual art form. It's not for everybody, but every magician is an artist in their own way, and art transcends the limitations of rational thought. Art, touches us in deeper ways than a lecture does. Okay. And magic, the magic art form, allows us to take all of these unspeakably profound levels of consciousness, and we personify them as descending natural powers. And we personify them as angels. We personify them as spirits. We personify them as intelligences and archangels and deities. And then we interact with them simply, viscerally, we could call the natural forces of the universe, physicists tell us there's, these four great forces, the strong force, the weak force, electromagnetism, and gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'm not a physicist, okay? But it's much easier for me to imagine this universal force of gravity as an archangel, okay? And, gravity AL, And all of the things that how gravity expresses itself throughout the entire universe would be like angels that work for gravity AL. There'd be like the forces of gravity as expressed in the behavior of a black hole, or the forces of gravity as expressed in what holds the moon in orbit around the Earth. There would be even smaller angels of gravity that personify the action of a falling raindrop, or a pencil sliding down an inclined plane, or a shoe dropping. You see how you get more specific and more specific and more specific in how gravity expresses itself. Well, the magician takes the point of view that everything in the universe is a natural force. It's there for a reason. Creation is neither there's not a moral attribute to the great what it is. Okay, it is universally good. But sometimes it acts like, from our limited point of view, it acts like, well, that's destructive, or that hurts, so it must be bad.
Yeah.
You see, ultimately, and the magician's view of deity isn't limited to a force that is so small that it can have an opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that when you talk about evil spirits and fallen angels and stuff like that, it's almost comical to me. Okay, it's almost like Michael, snap out of it. You know, we gotta think about a God that is so big that there is no outside of itself. It's so big that it can't have an opposite. If it has an opposite, it's not big enough to be deity yet.
So are you saying there isn't, like, demons?
Well, of course there is. If you can think of, first of all, let's just get down to today's headlines. Waterboarding is a demonic act. The forces behind the waterboarding, the torture, the sadistic infliction of pain, no matter how noble we can justify the reason for it, any evil that you can imagine, yes, you can personify that as a demon. But if you're talking about something that is somehow outside of the matrix of universal consciousness, then you're talking about something that can't exist in that simplistic way, or at least that's what I feel, and I'm a simple man.
So you would say then, when you hear about someone being possessed, you know, of a demon, that would not be the case. Like, that would be an illusion.
Well, it's not an illusion if they're turning their head around and throwing up.
But it's not a demon, though. You're saying,
well,
like, dark angel, a fallen angel.
Yeah. Well, you could call it that. Okay. You could call it anything you want. What I'm saying is that anyone that would presume to identify something like that as a spiritual force that is, the same thing as a mafia criminal, who works against you and your religion. Okay, no, it's not that small of a, a thing. It's a much more universal thing. It is at once less spooky and less scary than you can possibly imagine, and by the same token, it's more spooky and terrifying than you can imagine. But like, I practice the magical art form of Goetia, at least from time to time I do, and that's the classic thing where the magician stands in a circle and whips up a spirit into a triangle and sends it off to do usually some mundane operation or something. Those kind of spirits, by tradition, do the heavy lifting in the world. It's those kind of spirits that King Solomon raised to build, by tradition, raised the temple of God. And it takes a magician of a certain level of confidence and authority to raise that spirit and to put it to work for constructive purposes. But the spirit itself, in and of itself, is a blind force in the same way that the electricity is a blind force. And so when we have somebody whose mind is affected in such a way as they appear to be possessed by a classical demon of some kind, from the magical art form point of view, for the duration of the ceremony, yes, the magician buys into it. That's a demon. That's a That's a terrible thing, and I've got a formula here that can get rid of that. But you wouldn't take, say, a child sticks its finger into an electric light socket, and the child is quivering with the force of that electricity. Okay, you wouldn't say that, oh my God, Thomas Edison was the worst evil person in the world because, the child is possessed with electricity. No, the electricity can do good things too. You know, it's what holds the universe together. The kid has just got the finger stuck in the place where it can't stand the resistance. And so you wouldn't project a moral quality to electricity, and people who project a moral quality to the natural forces of the universe, whether they manifest as terrible mental illness or what appears to be dangerous and by any relative a definition, evil, for them to project some kind of very narrow sectarian label to that blind force is so superstitious that the superstition itself is a demon and is dangerous and is destructive. So when dealing in magic, and it may sound funny, here's a guy who's spent, the better part of his adult life, practicing magic, and I'm telling you yes, it's, for some people it can be a wonderful spiritual path, as long as you don't get superstitious about it. And that's just what I'm saying. Magic is a wonderful spiritual path. It's a wonderful spiritual art form. But if you get superstitious about it, I'm sorry, you've missed the big point. You're not doing magic. You're performing a perverse form of sectarian religion.
So you would say then, Lon, that there are no fallen angels then? I mean, when...
No, I'm not saying...
the Bible talks about the angels being split. Some go with Lucifer. Did that not really happen, or what?
Well, I don't think it happened in the same way that the War of 1812 happened. I am more or less convinced that certain books of the Bible are written by very illuminated Kabbalists, but they were written by Kabbalists for Kabbalists, and they were talking about things using imagery and words that expressed things that could not be expressed by images and words. And the idea of fallen angels is a super wonderful metaphor for the fact that you and I are not enlightened. Okay? Yeah, there is some kind of fall. Yes, you and I are. Well, I know I am. I don't know about Michael, but I am. I seem separated from my original state, if my original state was the environment of pure deity, that environment of supreme consciousness, and that matter itself seems to be light that has slowed down and become visible. Okay, and physicists are telling that that's just what the thing is. E equals mc squared. Matter is light slowed down. That's the fall. And the war in heaven and everything else, the Miltonian. You know, that war in heaven is only drawn from one small portion of the book of the Revelation of John. This idea of fallen angels, although we do find it talked about in like the Book of Enoch, and we hear it talked about a lot in John Milton. But to base our entire spiritual worldview on one metaphoric illustration of why we don't have the consciousness of God is really a big mistake, and it's been, in my opinion, the cause of much mental illness in Western civilization, especially in the last like 2,500 years.
Right. I just, I guess I still have a hard time wrapping my mind around not being any demons out there because, let me say this real quick. I'll ask you this question.
Okay.
Like when someone gets possessed, and yes, I agree, most people are, mentally ill, but there's a few minute people that actually will have a couple things going on. One is superhuman strength. Two is a language they don't know about. And three is they can tell, like the priest who's there, they can tell their sins. They can tell, like, what you talked about the previous day. And I guess you could say, well, maybe they're reading your mind, all of a sudden got this gift. But that
the Kabbalists have this concept of the four parts of the soul. And the lowest one is the animal soul or the physical body, and the one higher than that, the ruach, is your intellect, and then the one higher than that, the second highest part of your soul, is called the neshama, and the neshama is called the soul intuition, and the soul intuition of each of us is not bound by time and space. Not only that, but you know, when a mother wakes up in the middle of the night and she knows that her child has been in an accident?
Right.
You know, it really happens.
Right,
it,
I know. Uh-huh.
It's not even, you know, you can't even get the story printed in Fate magazine anymore. It just happens all the time.
Right, I've heard it a lot, yeah.
And the reason is, or at least the Kabbalists explain this, not because the child sent any kind of like mental telegraph message, "Mom, I'm in trouble," and the mom received it like a radio. The fact is, if the child was, you know, on the other side of town, mom would have got the message instantly, and if the child was on the moon, they would have got the message. She would have got the message instantly, and if the child would have been on Alpha Centauri, you know, light years away. She would have got the message instantly. And that is not because they sent a signal and the mom received it. It's because the mother's neshama is so big that there's nowhere in the universe the child could go to escape mom's neshama. Now, you and me are maybe thousands of miles apart here talking on the telephone, but nevertheless, my neshama is engulfing you, and your neshama is engulfing me. For all intent and purposes, there is no outside of ourselves. And when the person who is appears to be possessed with a demon is talking another language, that's because their neshama includes every language that was ever spoken from time immemorial. There is no past. There is no future. The neshama is this the part of the soul that the Kabbalists use or point to demonstrate that much of what we think is miraculous. When a little Mexican peasant woman sees Our Lady of Guadalupe, you know, in a cactus, you know, I'm right there with her. I believe it. She's seeing it. It's, you know, not only that, but it probably has within itself the same spiritual essence that she projects upon it. Same way with somebody who's possessed by a demon. You got to sort of back your camera up and get a wider angle on the whole picture. I'm not saying that these things don't happen. And on one level, yes, there's fallen angels. Yes, there's demons. Yes, there's any nasty or wonderful thing that you can conceive of. But what I'm saying is, if you're perceiving it, it's already in you. It's already a part of you. It is an expression of you. And that to deal with it in any other way is superstition, which is in of itself, far more dangerous than the thing that you're trying to exorcise. Saint Teresa, I think, said, she says, I don't fear Satan nearly as much as the people that fear Satan. And so I'm babbling on.
And no, you're not.
It's a pretty deep thing, and I try to write about these things in a way that is understandable. I try to put things in like step-by-step order, and this particular subject, I took a great deal of time to write a little book called Chicken Kabbalah of Rabbi Lamed Ben Clifford. And in a way, it's a funny introduction to Kabbalistic principles, the same principles that I'm trying to lay the foundation to answer your questions here tonight, and I try to do it in the same way that I teach my class here in Costa Mesa, that I use humor. I put things in a perspective that tries to deliver these concepts kind of with the silver bullet of humor. And if anybody seems super shocked at what I've just said, please, before you get too crazy about condemning me, check out my book, The Chicken Kabbalah, and I think you'll probably see what I'm talking about and not be so shocked.
Before we take a quick little break here, I'm going to try to get the chat room going here. But Lon, why don't you give your contact information out to the listeners out there, how they can contact you?
Hey, my website. It's currently being tinkered with, and so I'm going to just get crazy and give everybody just my home email address.
Okay.
And any questions, then I can give you links to my books or my CDs or my DVDs and do it from there. So it's very simple. My email address is Lon Milo. One word, LONMILO, @gmail.com. LonMilo @gmail.com.
Okay.
And I'll try to do what my website usually does.
And don't you also, you told me you hold a class on Monday nights, is that right? A magic class? Or?
Yes, for the last 33 years, Monday night magic class. In Costa Mesa, and if you're people in Southern California are welcome to contact me, and if you convince me that you can behave yourself in my house for for 2 hours, I'll send you more information.
Okay, well, I got a lot more questions for you, and I see that there's some callers on hold. I promise to get to you guys just as soon as we get back with Lon.
Well, don't put on people that stalk me. I hate it when stalkers call. So if I tell you, Michael, that's a stalker.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll screen it for you, Lon. Okay. Okay, we'll take this short little break here, and we'll be back.
Thank you.
day like the fall must gone. Birds have sung their last, the bells call out to mass. Seat here by my side, for the night is very long. Something I must hear before I pass along. I join the brotherhood, my books were all to me. I scribe the words of God and much of history. Many here was I, which out upon the sea, the waves would wash my
to Ghosts and Demons. I'm your host, Michael Long, and tonight we got Lon Milo Duquette on the phone with us, going into our second hour. Lon, are you there?
I am here.
Great. Okay, let's start taking a few calls here, and first person I'm going to pull up is going to be B, I believe, from Colorado. B, are you there? delay there. Hello, B.
Mike, can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay, you're on now.
Oh, fabulous.
Welcome. Sorry for the
hold
there.
Well, thank you so much. It's been fascinating, fascinating conversation.
This is Lon. This is B. Hertz. She's on my show the last two shows. She's a real good psychic medium from Colorado.
Hi, B. I had an Aunt B.
Oh, you did?
There are fewer and fewer bees around nowadays.
And mine's not spelled B-E-A. It's B-E-E, so it's a little different.
Wow.
Yes.
Well,
I'm just absolutely, I'm listening. I'm just riveted to everything that you have to say. Since I am a psychic, but I'm a consummate reader, and I just have, been diving into some of your contemporaries here. Daniel Pinchbeck, the 2012 kind of thing, and I don't know if this is something that you're familiar with, but
The name doesn't ring a bell, but,
mm-hmm.
but you know,
right,
I'm a sucker for 2012 stuff. I stay up late and with my wife yelling at me to come to bed, and I'm watching all of these videos and 2012 things, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff.
Well, he's fabulous. He's fabulous. He's a writer for the New York Times, and he's reminded me a lot of you. And so he went, to the Mayan culture and 2012, to figure it out for himself. And he went down there and dropped, did some LSD, did some of these things, and kind of the Aldous Huxley thing opened the doors of perception for him. And so his whole theory of, I don't know if you have anything to speak on Merkabas. Do you know that subject matter at all?
You mean Merkaba, the chariots?
No, Merkabas meaning the geometric design of the universe.
Oh, I'm not qualified to speak with any level of expertise on that stuff.
Oh, okay, I was just curious about it, but we'll skip that one then.
Before you skip
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
The whole Kabbalistic idea of organizing, levels of consciousness and degrees of consciousness by means of how they're expressed in numbers and things generally speak to the at least metaphorically to the shape of the universe and how all things. I'm the Kabbalists, I'm sorry, we're the most anal retentive people in the world.
Oh, it's fabulous.
These guys were so organized that it hurts my head when I try to wrap my brain around. They must have just been paid to sit around and think about stuff all day. but only in that respect am I familiar with and fascinated by that subject.
Okay, I have a question for you, and maybe I'm confused, but I'm listening. So, what I wanted to know what your answer or how you would answer someone that said, like myself, I'll just put myself out there. I channel the Archangel Gabriel. At least that's what I think I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
I will throw that out into your ballpark and say, how in your in your perspective, what you have been saying, how would you speak to that? How would you say, okay, I'm saying I'm channeling the Archangel Gabriel. This is how I get messages for people, and I get messages from the other side, or I get messages from your Aunt B, things of that nature. How does that fit into your kind of realm of magic?
Well,
or does it? Two separate.
It fits quite easily into it.
Okay.
And quite comfortably. I studied, the works of Dr. John Dee and his partner Edward Kelly back in Elizabethan times. And the spiritual intelligences that they dealt with included the Archangel, Raphael and Michael and Uriel and all the other ALs. I am quite comfortable with the fact from a magical perspective that that even two or three or four people could be talking with intelligences that, for all intent and purposes, fit the description and are comfortable with calling themselves the names of classic archangels. In the same way, though, however, mm-hmm. that they have to communicate to us in words, images, and concepts that we understand. I am totally ready to accept, you know, sincerely the reality of you channeling Raphael. But by the same token, that I don't think you've cornered the market on all things Raphaelish.
Oh, no, I don't think that's possible. I agree with
right.
you completely on that. And it's Gabriel, by the way. That's okay. But no, I get, actually, it's pretty funny because when I do a reading for people, they'll say, oh, you know, who are my archangels around me? And I will get Gabriel with other people, that energy, or whatever you want to call it, with other people. So I don't believe that it just is me alone.
Right.
I'm not that special, you know.
by the same token, be prepared to accept that it's not Raphael or Gabriel alone either. It is a wonderful universal intelligence that neatly fits the description and your emotional acceptance of that image and that spiritual character. And it would be I would not tell you to try to overthink the thing or to do like the Kabbalists and try to, oh, I can define this in so many. See, you're talented, and your talent is as a channeling. Channeling is your magical art form, and the names and the images and the characteristics and the specific types of information that's coming from this intelligence is it would be a mistake for you to try to turn this into mathematics and an explanation. Call it Gabriel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Have it, you know, because that's the way you can best utilize it to its utmost. Did you see the movie, I think it's called Contact, with Jodie?
Yes, I did.
And remember when she had her great epiphany contact, where, you know, she went in that incredible machine and, you
mm-hmm.
know, and she was having like a vision.
Right.
And in the vision, her father appeared to her. Her father, who had, in a sense, he was like an archangel to her. You know, he inspired her. Her father, or this great superior intelligence, you know, took the form of her father, so that she could have a conversation with it, that on a not only an intellectual level, but an emotional level, you know, and a full-blown soul level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Archangel Uriel or Gabriel or Mikhail would appear to John Dee and Edward Kelly way back in, you know, 1580,
yeah.
They too needed to be communicated to with images and with a character that they could understand.
Understood.
And,
yes.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And so, so I'm all for you channeling Gabriel. Just
no, thank you. Well, I've certainly enjoyed your talk this evening.
Well, thank you, and thank you for calling, and thank you for being a bee.
Yes. Well, thank you for your wonderful. I'm going to get on. Where are your books? Are they on Amazon.com, perchance?
Oh yes, I forgot.
Fabulous.
I forgot to mention that to Michael. It's best just to Google me on Amazon. And
okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, I will certainly do that, and I wanted to know how I could get your books and your CDs, and I'll go on Amazon and do that. Well, thank
okay.
you so much,
yes,
and keep and I'll be listening. So thanks for the great information.
Sure.
It's very informative.
And feel free to email me directly, and I'll give you other links, too.
And I promise I'm not a stalker.
He's not. Before you hang up, why don't you give the listeners out there your contact information?
Okay, it's Lon Milo. LONMILO at gmail.com.
And wow, we can get right to you. That's fabulous.
Yes, I'm just. Unless
well, I won't try to bug you too much.
Okay,
and then
thank you so much.
Your website, isn't that BeeHerz.com?
Oh, yeah, it's BeeHerz.com. Pretty easy.
BeeHerz.
Yes.
Right.
So, yep. But thank you so much for taking my call, and thanks for the wonderful explanation on the Kabbalah is so I can't even I try it's a difficult piece of work, and I applaud your diligence and your life work.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Nice talking with you. Good night.
Hey,
good
thanks
night.
For calling, B. Okay, now we're going to area code 508.
Hello?
Hello, caller. What is your first name and where are you calling from? What state?
Paul from Massachusetts.
Okay, and your name is?
Paul from Massachusetts.
Okay.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Lon. My question was... I don't know if you've heard of SETI and SETINET, SETI. If you think they're going to find anything, and I don't know if you've been on their site, but they have, I believe, 16 findings that they've posted with images and sound bites, and I'm not sure they've really deciphered them, though. I was wondering if you think they're going to find anything, and if it's going to be a cherub or a demon or the creator himself, and... Your comment on UFOs, flying saucers.
Okay. Well, first of all, we're talking about the SETI program of looking for extraterrestrial life through radio telescopes and things like that.
Yes.
Well, I'm not a prophet, so I can't tell predict whether they're going to be successful or not. But I, my personal opinion is that the universe is the universe in our dimension is so vast, and the time periods involved in make it seem to me very unlikely that they won't eventually make some kind of contact. Indeed,
right.
We may have already made contact, and we're just not understanding the nature of the contact.
Right.
And your question about whether they're angels or demons or something like that. Obviously, there's something within the racial memory of humanity. That suggests that we've been visited, or we've been implanted, or we've been somehow manipulated, or something, by intelligences that currently we're not bumping into every day here in our regular, day-to-day reality.
Sure.
And I think it with the vastness of the universe, it's almost inconceivably arrogant
Absolutely.
Of us to think that we're the only carbon-based mammals that have, you know, or reptiles or insects that have ever developed, you know, since the Big Bang started to cool down.
Pangea.
And you know, I'm particularly fascinated by actually, it was probably a Sumerian account that went into the creation of Genesis, the book of Genesis, the Nephilim and what the Bible refers to as the sons of God that found the daughters of men pleasant, or something like that. It doesn't, however, occupy my attention to such a degree that it's part of my great work. You know, I'm happy it's part of lots of people's great work to study this and to probe it. And as far as UFOs are concerned, I don't know if I've ever said this in public, but when Constance and I lived in Southern Oregon for about 6-7 months back in 1968-69, we saw things in the sky every night we went out to look.
I tell you, I think it was 2006. I was going to a psych appointment in Boston, and along the Charles River, I thought I saw one just along the Charles River.
And wow!
So you know, it's good to keep a sense of wonder.
It really is, and you know, we were young hippies, but we were also in Southern Oregon. And we hadn't had as much as a marijuana roach in months, and so we weren't out of our minds on psychedelics or anything. But
right. To keep that
we'd go out and lay in our little yard there near the Illinois River, and just look up in the sky, and we'd watch, and we'd see, and the stars are so clear and beautiful. But we'd just look at the stars, and then all of a sudden, one of those stars would just take a little trip. It would move about 3 degrees across the sky, and then we'd all point it out and say, "Well, look at that one! Look at that one!" And then a couple minutes later, it would move again at another angle.
Yeah, well,
just to thrill us, like three or four of them would move as a constellation. And that was a routine sighting. One late afternoon, I was walking back from the river, and I looked over the barn, which was actually a home of a friend of ours, and there was the classic Ed Wood flying saucer, and it looked like it was only about 600-700 feet above the barn, and it was moving about the speed of it looked like it was moving about 60 miles an hour, just a leisurely pace. And I got so excited, and I started to run and sort of to try to keep pace with it, and I was yelling at my wife to come out and see this. And it had the little dome, and it had lights, and it was just...
Well, you can't believe everything you see in here now, can you? And actually, I must be on my way. My mom's calling me.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you for calling in.
Well, gee, I guess I came out of the UFO closet there.
Now everybody knows you're on board with the UFO projects there. Okay, let's go to our next caller here. The board says the name is Lammy or Larry, one of the two. Hello, caller?
Lammy.
Lamy, okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, and you're calling from what state?
I'm calling from Portugal, the other side of the ocean.
Wow. Hey, great. You're on with Lon.
Hello.
Hi, Lon. I have an easy question for you and a hard one. The easy one is, have you ever come to Portugal, or are you thinking of coming?
I would love to. I don't have any plans to at the moment. I've never been to Portugal. A couple of my books are translated into Portuguese, and I think there's I've got one more that will be released very, very soon in Portuguese. My Peter Solomon's Key, The Secrets of Magic of Masonry, is in Portuguese, and I believe my I'm not sure. My Angels, Demons, and Gods of the New Millennium, perhaps. But
yeah, you have another about the Thelemic Rites.
Okay. The Magic Palace.
I have that one.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Well,
now I
now the big.
That, but what's the hard one now?
Now the big hard one question that I have is, if I'm going to trying to explain myself this, is how do you go with all the Aleister Crowley books and all the occult books and all the magic books, how do you translate that in changing your reality panels so you can have a perception of, I will not say everything, but almost anything that you can grasp so you can have an understanding of everything?
Well, that's a very good question, and it's probably the single most important question, if I'm understanding you correctly. I've got a quote. It's kind of a cliche, but it's a quote that I say that the only thing that I can change with magic is myself. And I really mean that. I really believe that. I believe that anything that you do in a magical way, even if it is to cause change to occur in somebody else's life or to cause something to happen, what you're really doing is acting first upon yourself. And it's almost like, for an example, I would like to get this new job. Okay, let's say there's a job that you want, and you do a magical ceremony. You call a spirit, or with Enochian magic, do an Enochian call, and you have a vision that'll help you help direct you to a way to get that job. But what you're really doing with the magical operation is like reprogramming yourself. The magical operation itself gives you a little adventure. Okay, an adventure. The ceremony itself is an adventure, but sometimes it causes things in your daily life, events in your daily life to conspire to give you a sort of a little adventure that builds your character. You know, when you have an adventure, when Indiana Jones has an adventure, it changes him into a new, improved, more experienced Indiana Jones, you know, by the end of the movie. So what magic does is, I want this other job, so you do a magical ceremony. The magical ceremony gives you an adventure. You overcome that adventure, and in overcoming that adventure, you mutate yourself into the type of person that gets that job. Does that make sense?
So you change by changing your perception, something like that?
It does. It changes. Well, it changes a lot of things in you, including your perception, and sometimes. As the years go by, as a magician,
as the years go by, sometimes you get discouraged and you think, you know, what am I doing? Nothing's happening in my life. I'm not enlightened. I'm not illuminated. I thought I could walk on, I should be walking on water by now, you know. And but then you stop and think, now wait a minute, where was I a year ago? What was my understanding of the universe a year ago? And every time you'll go, oh, I would not trade places with myself where I was a year ago, or even a month ago, or even yesterday, or even 10 minutes ago. You wouldn't trade places with that person, so that you have to put things in perspective on how enlightened you really are right now. And then keep in mind that with sincere practice, sincere seeking, year after year after year, your mind starts to wrap itself around these concepts in such a way as when you ask yourself a question, you start giving yourself the answer. This is most apparent when you begin to teach. I don't even know what I know until somebody asks me a question. I don't even know I know the answer until I try to explain it to somebody. This is why I've kept this goofy Monday night magic class going for over 30 years, is because there are people at class that have been in the class for 20 years, and there's also people in the class that are there for the very, very first time. And I have to teach a class that still stimulates and teaches the adept students, and at the same time put it in such a way as the very beginning students can understand. And it's a wonderful exercise, and it causes me to time and time again explain everything to myself from the very beginning, as if I was the most neophyte of neophytes. And I think if I'm reading your question accurately, you might already be more enlightened than you think you are. And 20 years from now, I guarantee you will not want to trade places with who you are right at this moment. Well, please do what you can to get me to Portugal. I would love to go there while I'm still young and beautiful.
We would love to have you. So okay. You can always see the where Crowley did in the Hell Mouth.
Yes.
He think that he was going to commit suicide.
Okay. I truly want to do it, and I haven't been on the peninsula yet, but I go to England a lot, and I travel a lot every year. So, yeah, let's get me over there.
Yeah, stop by and meet us.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Keep in touch with me, and I'll let you know if the universe conspires to get me over in your neighborhood.
Okay. Night is free.
Send him an airline ticket. He'll be there.
Pretty much.
All right, Lammy. Thank you for calling from Portugal. Appreciate it. We are still taking callers at 347-884-8245. We have just about 30 minutes left is all of the show. So if you want to have a question, please call now to get in before the show is over, as we still have a couple other people holding. But before we go to that, Lon, I wanted to get into another area with you I know you've told this story before, and I'd like you to tell all the listeners, and the Queen Elizabeth, I guess that's the first, right?
Mm-hmm.
She, with Howard Dean, the angel came and spoke to them, or one of them, and gave them the prayer of speak to the angels that you actually have?
Oh,
can you tell that story and
First, I want to ask. I'll want to ask you a question in a second because you wrote something that really fascinated me. Dr. John Dee was Queen Elizabeth I's counselor, and he was also her spy, her secret agent. John Dee was probably the smartest man in the world. He was very famous in his day and should be very famous now, but he was the world's greatest mathematician. Before there was a Newton, there was a John Dee, and he was also a magician. But in those days, magic, unless you're whipping up demons and cursing people and things like that. In that case, he got burned at the stake. But intellectual magic, Kabbalistic magic, was considered just as scientific a study, same way as alchemy, as any other science. So it was not unscientific for this great scientist and mathematician of the day to be interested in magic. And when Elizabeth... with astrology, he picked the date of Elizabeth's coronation. Probably the most famous thing that Dee was credited with doing was raising the storm that sank the Spanish Armada and saved England from Spain. So famous was that story that just like 25 years after Dee's death, Shakespeare patterned the character Prospero from The Tempest off of the character of John Dee. He was very famous. Everybody in that day said, well, yeah, he's a great magician, raised the storm, all of that. Well, anyway, because Dee was such a popular mathematician and a world famous. His mathematics books were famous all over Europe and translated in every major European language. Incidentally, they're still taught in universities today. Dee's commentaries on the propositions of Euclid still in print. But because he was like a rock star, he was like a mathematical rock star, and he could go all over Europe. And kings and queens would invite him over and ask him to come to work for him and everything. Dee could speak all of the European languages, so he was the perfect candidate to be a spy for Elizabeth. And he just loved this idea that of being a spy for his beloved queen. And he was known to her by sort of a secret code. That he was the queen's eyes, and he'd sign his secret dispatches with two circles and like a seven at the end of it, but the roof of the seven went over the two eyes like hands shading the eyes.
Uh-huh.
And so he was 007. He was the queen's spy, secret agent, and he was 007, and Ian Fleming picked up on that and made James Bond as 007. And there's an exhibit at the International Spy Museum in Washington D.C. There's a big exhibit of John Dee there. So, but anyway, he got tired of traveling to Europe all the time to spy for her, and he thought, gee, wouldn't it be nice if I could just sit at home and look into a crystal ball or look into a black mirror and remote view, spy on Elizabeth's enemies just from the comfort of his own home. So he started a magical quest to contact intelligences, angelic intelligences who would help him spy on Elizabeth. And he wasn't very clairvoyant himself. He could do half the magic. He could do the prayers, and he could do the, and he had the will, but he just wasn't a very good. He wasn't like B. He wasn't good at channeling.
Mm-hmm.
And he put out an ad for clairvoyance, and eventually got in touch with this guy named Edward Kelly, and. Edward Kelly, one of the first times they tried this out, made contact with someone that called themselves the Archangel Uriel, and eventually got in touch with angels who described themselves as the same angels that communicated with the Old Testament prophets and patriarchs, like Enoch.
Mm-hmm.
And so just in the, almost as an aside, almost as a detour from trying to spy on the courts of Poland and stuff, the angels more or less de-ask something like, is my friend Prince Laski ever going to be king of Poland? And the angels, they didn't say this exactly like I'm saying it, but for all intents and purposes, the angels said, you know, Dee, we can tell you that. We can tell you whether Prince Laski is going to be king of Poland. But in order for you to, for us to give you that information, you're going to have to understand how we see the universe. You're going to have to understand how the universe was created in such a way as there is now an Earth and a Laski and a Poland and the concept of kingship. In other words, yeah, we can tell you the answer, but first you're going to have to understand how the universe operates. And over a three-year period, through means that are so mind-bogglingly astounding, Dee and Kelly eventually learned, were taught the language of these angels, and when it's translated into to English, these calls are found to be a real language with grammar and syntax. It's one of the most amazing magical stories of all time. Professional linguists, modern linguists, are so fascinated with it that even though they're like Dr. Donald Laycock, he's not a magician. Laycock wasn't interested in magic. He was interested in language, and he was so fascinated by this story that he went to work and took a couple of years and wrote out a complete Enochian dictionary complete with all the bells and whistles of the real live language. And in a way, these angelic calls and this angelic language are like music to the ears of these angelic beings. And again, I'm going to take us back to this thing about angels representing levels of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what the calls affect in human consciousness is that the calls are sort of like a drug. Okay. The calls raise your consciousness to a very specific and very focused level of consciousness. That's what makes the system so marvelous. It doesn't just open you up like mediums just open up to, you know, throw the door wide open.
Uh-huh.
This is just like a Venetian blind slit of consciousness that you attune yourself with. And so what we've got left in what I did for the last 2 years was to write this story, including their 3 years of preparation, in a new book called Enochian Vision Magic, which I'm shamelessly plugging right now, even as we speak, plugging that book. But when you speak this language, even with a terrible halting accent, you know, any attempt to speak this language can affect profound changes in your consciousness. And it's almost like you're singing their favorite song. And when you sing their favorite song, you know, somewhere in angelic frequencies of consciousness, they go, "Hey, somebody's singing our song. You know, let's stop by and see what he's up to." And when they come to your environment, they raise the level of consciousness in the room, and it sort of puts you in a slight altered state of consciousness. And if you're relaxed enough, and if you're focused enough, and if you're, you know, unafraid enough, you have visions. And in those visions, once you get good at it, you can communicate with these angels in the same way that Dee and Kelly did back in the 1580s. And so I think you heard me do the call of the 19th aether. Yes. No, the 19th call, which is the call of the 30th aether, on Coast to Coast a few years back.
Yeah,
right?
With Barbara Simpson, right.
Uh-huh. Right. Now, you know, I know you're interviewing me, but I'm dying to hear what happened to you.
Well, before I get to that, can you say that call? Because that was so great, so beautiful. And I know once you were on Coast to Coast after that with George Norrie, and then you were like saying, and he cut you off in the middle of it, and I'm kind of screaming at my radio, like, "Why did you do that?"
well, you know, he shouldn't have, but I think he got spooked.
Yeah.
I think it kind of spooked him, but also he's thinking about commercial time too.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
He didn't know how long it was going to take and
right,
stuff. So
exactly.
It's really not all that long.
But yeah, if you could do that for us,
sure,
that'd be awesome.
Sure. And this would be the call, the way I'm going to do it, that would open up the 30th, or the lowest of the angelic heavens, that's just sort of above the material plane. So we're not going to plunge, you know, too deeply into Brahmaloka here. Okay, so this should be perfectly safe for people who are driving, even. Okay, it's the call of the 30th aether, and the aether is called Tex. Madrias dies prof Tex. Kis mi kaols, senior kaosgo. Od fifis balzithras yada. Nunca gohulim. Mikma adoyan mad. Yod bliorb. Soba owa na kis lusiftias peripsa. Dies abrasa nons ni taib kaosgi. Od tilbd ad fetum plas. Tuat nons gi mikalzoma. Elraz tafglo marb yari I do ego. Od tolzolp yadaf kohol, kaos gata beyerzin near od Christios ir poil tiobl, bas dir tilb noan bai dors bad od rem nizilna. Elzap tilb, panji peripsax. Od aquels buapas il nibem ucho simp. Od Christios agel toton merque tiobl lelel, ton pem dils moas pian. Ut Christios agel torton paraca simp. Cordzis, tut pal ut fifis els menad, ut falst, bamsum mavas, cunis brao ava vax tununc. Ors catibel noas mi tabges lipith mong, unciom tibelors. Baglei,
Mua ul kordzis. El capi mao ik so maxip, ul kako kasab gose. Baglen pi tianta ababaland, od farts teluk vovim. Madriax torzu, o adriax o rocha abrapri. Tabeori priar zar tabas, adrepan kurz te dubix, iol kam priaziar quasior, o de quas quetin. Ripir palax agacor, umel od pridza kakoye oi fecompt. Torzu, zakar od zamran as psipsibut mona, dies surzat tiabaltan, o do cicle que, o de zasma, plapli yad nomad. And that's the call of the 30th Aether text.
Great. So that's the language of the angels, right? Is that what you said?
Correct.
A few people asking in the chat. Okay. So, and can you let us know what a few of that, what that translates in English a little bit?
Yeah. And the part, they received the language first. Well, in pieces, and then the angel just flat out said, "Well, that means this." Okay, and then finally, when they got all 19 of these done, and then all 19 of them translated, they discovered that the same verbs are the same verbs, and the same nouns are the same nouns, and the same parts of speech are the same parts of speech in the throughout the whole thing. So this really is a language. It's not a like barbarous words or gibberish or other kind of magical words. It really is a language, and the way it all came down is it's really mind-boggling. But anyway, this is what this one says. O you heavens, and remember, it's like their song, you know, and it's almost like deity talking to itself. O you heavens which dwell in the 30th Aether, which are mighty in the parts of the earth, and which execute the judgment of the highest, to you it is said, behold the face of your God, the beginning of comfort, whose eyes are the brightness of heaven, who provided for you the government of the earth and her unspeakable variety, furnishing you with a power of understanding to dispose all things according to the providences of him that sits on the holy throne, and who rose up in the beginning, saying, the earth, let her be governed by her parts, and let there be division in her, that the glory of her may always say, may be always ecstasy and irritation of orgasm. The course of her, let it run with the heavens, and as a handmaid, let her serve them. One season, let it confound another, and let there be no creature upon or within her the same. All members, let them differ in their qualities, and let there be no creature equal with one another. The reasonable creatures of the earth or man, let them vex and weed out one another, and the dwelling places, let them forget their names. The work of man and his pomp, let them be defaced. The buildings of her, let them become caves of the beasts of the field. Confound the understanding of her with darkness. Why? It rejoiceth me concerning the virgin and the man. One, while let her be known, and another, while a stranger, because she is the bed of an harlot, and the dwelling place of him that is fallen. O you heavens, arise! The lower heavens underneath you, let them serve you. Govern those that govern. Cast down such as fall. Bring forth with those that increase, and destroy the rotten. No place let it remain in one number. Add and diminish until the stars be numbered. Arise! Move and appear before the covenant of his mouth, which he has sworn unto us in his justice. Open the mysteries of your creation, and make us partakers of undefiled knowledge. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. I can sit here and listen to that all night.
Yeah, I know.
Unfortunately, our time is winding down. I'll tell you the story you asked
okay.
that I wrote you about, and I got one caller on area code 207, and we'll get to you before we run out here. Lon, for all the listeners to know this also, Lon appeared on Coast to Coast with Barbara Simpson. Gosh, that has to be in, what do you think, 3, 4, 5 years ago?
Yeah, it must be 5 at least.
She's no longer there on the weekends, unfortunately. Anyway, Lon went ahead and did the prayer, the angels that he just did, and I had it on archive. So I would play that prayer and say it along with Lon, because, you know, I couldn't say it without, without someone going along with. But anyway, I would say it along with Lon, and then I would, during that time, I even wrote Lon this, actually, you might not remember, but in emails that I was kind of in between. I've always been an entrepreneur, but things just haven't gone my way, and things were just really financially, job-wise, and everything then for me was pretty bad, even though I was trying in all sorts of ways of business and so forth. But nothing had worked. So I prayed along with this prayer and, you know, asked for the above for assistance. And within a month's time, I was hooked up with a company that totally changed my business. And within a year's time, my family moved from a house of about 1,100 square feet to about 3,700 square feet.
Oh, wow.
And my life changed forever.
Wow.
And I just don't believe in coincidences, and that's just too remarkable.
Wow.
So ever since that, and then getting this show going, I was like, I got to get Lon on here. So.
Oh, that's so neat.
Yeah.
That's so neat.
So,
wow.
Okay, let's go to area code 207.
Hello.
Hello. What is your first name?
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Okay. What is your first name, caller?
I'm on a cell phone, so sometimes it's a little rough.
Okay, go ahead and talk to Lon if you can get through. We can hear you.
Okay. I'm going to ask a question, but I also want to ask if you've ever heard of David Flynn and listened to any of his lectures.
No, I haven't, but that doesn't mean he's not a famous guy. I just haven't heard of him or his work.
I just have the deep urge to try to tell as many people as I can to definitely some of the connections he's made between a lot of the ancient artifacts and different things on the moon. But just a lot of coincidences.
Okay, that's
a
David.
Lot of enlightening.
That's David Flynn.
F-L-Y-N-N? Y-N-N, yes.
Okay, well, I'll Google around.
Yeah, you can find a lot of it on YouTube, too.
Okay.
It's the connection is really awesome. But what my question is I've been studying a lot of metaphysical and a lot of things for, oh gosh, what, good 35 years or so. I had a really good connection once upon a time, but I kind of slacked off a bit. I can't quite get back to where I was, and I've seen ghosts, and I've had some really remarkable visions, and a lot of things, and a lot of astral travel, and I just been finding it really hard to connect back into everything right now, and I'm just looking for, trying to figure out, I'm really wanting to really change my life, and I really need a life change and really need to get things back on track.
Okay.
And, I'm kind of lost, I guess.
Well, the first thing that I would say is probably the safest thing for me to say is don't try to get back to where you were. Try to get back to where you are at the moment. And it seems like sort of a universal occurrence that sometimes when we're younger, like in our 20s, we can see auras, we have ghostly visitations, we communicate with spirit guides and have all sorts of stuff, wonderful stuff happening kind of on the psychic realm. And then for one reason or another, that stops. And it doesn't mean that you are not progressing anymore. It means that you're working through other things. You have other things to learn, other things that you need to do, and at least for the time being, those old skills, those old powers are you need to leave them behind at least for a little while you learn something else. And I'm confident that in the time period between now and back when you're just popping off psychic right and left, that you are undergoing some kind of life experience that is causing you to grow, as long as you're still focused on wanting to move forward with your spiritual life. You're still setting the pattern day to day to make that happen. So I would counsel you to be encouraged that as long as you're focused on wanting it to happen, things are happening in your life to unfold that to you, and it may be years before you see exactly what that process has been, but rest assured, once you've set your foot on the path, you're going to make it to the end.
Okay. So, and there's, I've just been trying to figure out what exactly, I can't find out what that purpose is yet, though.
welcome to the club.
I know there's a purpose. You know, I figure by the time I was 50, I'd know, and I just don't know yet. And it's
okay.
Really.
Well, I would before I go to bed every night, I would get in touch with the highest concept that you can possibly conceive of, and every night without fail, say, reveal to me what that purpose is. And then every day when you get up, don't even get out of bed before you do the same thing in the morning. Something. Let this day reveal to me what that is. I guarantee you, if you can remember to do that every day and every night and every morning, you will start being communicated to you by the most bizarre array of synchronicities that it'll be hard to write them all down. So you're not too old.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I really do suggest you looking into David Flynn.
I'm going to look up
something inside of me. I come across his lectures last week, and something inside of me is telling me to tell as many people as I can.
Well, maybe that's part of your great work right now, and you just did a real good job there.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Lon, we only have a few minutes left. Those 2 hours just flew on by.
Wow.
But we'll definitely have you back, that's for sure. Why don't you give the listeners your contact information again and how they can contact you and find your books and everything.
Okay. Well, as far as books go, if they would just go to Amazon.com and type in Lon Duquette or Lon Milo Duquette, and that's Duquette is D-U-Q-U-E-T-T-E, and all my books will pop up there. I also have a website, and my website still connects to my DVDs and things. So if you let me, I'll give that website address.
Sure, go ahead.
And that's just Lon Milo Duquette, one word, lonmiloduquette.com. And there's a few things that don't work on the website, but I've got DVDs on Kabbalah and tarot. And I've even recorded a CD of my Songs of Sentiment and Blasphemy that I call the White Album.
Yes, I know. I wouldn't get a chance to get into that, and I couldn't upload your music because my computer does.
Okay.
But I am going to be playing that for my future shows for you. But
oh, very good.
I know one of the songs you like the most is called I Love to Get Drunk in the Car. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, that's the most evil song in the world. but otherwise, I'm happy for people to contact me directly at my home email address, and that's just lonmilo@gmail.com. And whatever they might be interested in, I'll be sure to link them up that way. I'm going to give. Have you heard of Maybe Logic Academy?
No, I haven't.
Have you heard of Robert Anton Wilson?
Vaguely.
There's a thing called there's an E Academy called Maybe Logic Academy, and I'm on the faculty there. And later this year I will be teaching via the internet a class on Enochian magic. If anyone is interested in that. So it looks like we're out of time.
Yes, unfortunately, Lon, but I really, really appreciate you being on, and I will contact you again to have you on more in the future.
Okay.
And I appreciate it all. So take care, Lon.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Sure. Thank you, Lon.
Bye-bye.
Listeners out there, I want to thank you for joining Ghosts and Demons. I'm your host, Michael Long. Please tune in again tomorrow night. We'll have another show at 10 p.m. 10 p.m. Central Time with a psychic medium taking your free readings for 2 hours. So please check in with us again, our show at 10 p.m. Monday night, tomorrow night, and that will be it with this show. Thank you again for listening and calling in with your questions and being in the chat room. Appreciate it. So until tomorrow, God bless you all.
Spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.